Hello and welcome to this weekend edition of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Starting off an excellent program for today, David Vaughan meets Egyptian novelist Hamdi El-Ghazar at the Prague Writers Festival. After that, we'll get a look at the lighter side of the news in magazine, and later on in our program, another trip through the Czech radio archives. All that ahead, so please stay tuned. It was apt that one of the participants in this year's Prague Writers' Festival was the Egyptian novelist Hamdi El-Ghazar, who played an active part in the dramatic events last spring on Cairo's Tahrir Square. It is no coincidence that the revolutions across North Africa and the Middle East came to be known as the Arab Spring, taking their name from events in Czechoslovakia, the Prague Spring, over 40 years earlier. You do not have to look far to find parallels between the atmosphere of then and now, and the events of 1968 are also a warning that not every popular uprising ends happily. David Vaughan talks to Hamdi El-Ghazar about his experience as a writer and a journalist.
All his life, Hamdi El-Ghazar has been fascinated by the back streets of his native Cairo, and the city is a main protagonist in his work. His first novel, Black Magic, has become a bestseller and has made El-Ghazar one of the best-known younger novelists in the Arab-speaking world. The novel sees the world through the lens of a television camera, and it comes as no surprise that the author has spent many years working with Egyptian TV. He was a witness and an active participant in last year's revolution and has written extensively about those events, both as a journalist and a writer of fiction. When I spoke to him in the studios of our partner station, Radio Wave, he began by talking about Western misconceptions about Islam.
How people consider Islam in West is very different from what we believe in Egypt. Islamic culture is something very wide, have a lot of elements. You can't say it's just some rules and forbidden things, but Islamic culture means a lot of things. Means everyday life, means arts like architecture, like our literature, like artists. You can see that especially in Sufi songs. So Islam is not very close to the religious habits only. And the practice of Islam presents a lot of shape of life that is very deep in Egyptian everyday life.
Today there's going to be a discussion about the future of Islam, which you'll be part of, together with a Spanish and a British writer. You were there at the time of the revolution in Cairo last year. It seems that the revolution isn't yet over. How do you feel, for example, towards the Muslim Brotherhood?
The result of election disappointed people because Muslim Brotherhood come to power and have a lot of chairs in the parliament. But when I contemplate this result, I say the Egyptians choose the right thing. Because this organization has a lot of powers, weapons, and they made violence in Mubarak regime too. So the Egyptians want to avoid violence, want to avoid a civil war. Because the situation in the country was so bad, insecurity, and a lot of people afraid of the weapon that Islamists have. So they elect them to give them a responsibility to try to test them, to tell them, okay, now you are in the parliament, so solve our problems. So what you will do with poverty, don't speak a lot about God. We know God more than you. Just work as politicians. And it makes peace in country too. The Egyptians too elect a lot of symbols of the left-wing liberals too at the same time. So it makes balance in the society. And otherwise, the chair of the president, I think it will come from the liberal wing or from the left wing.
Would you be pleased if Mohamed Baradei became president?
Sure, he is a big symbol of the Egyptian revolution, and I think he's clever. 1 year before the revolution, he said that changing must come, and it came. And I think he's the only man in Egypt can lead this country for freedom, justice, and he has a real program of reform.
Czech readers will be very interested to read what you have written about the events last year in Cairo, in Egypt. We know that you've been writing about it. Has your new book about these events already come out, and will we be able to read it?
I'm still writing in it, and I started writing in it in 29 January, when the hottest day in the revolution. At first, I suppose I must write something like article, because it non-fiction work, because I can follow the events, so I write very short articles in Arabic and in English, had published very quickly, but after that I can't do that more, so I return back to my own style of writing. So I start to write fiction, very short literary works, and start to publish it. Every week I publish a text in mainstream journals, which I did not publish before. I try to speak to wider audience, so I did. But now I return back to what I think that my talent as a novelist. So now I'm trying to finish this big novel. It'll be such like an epic work.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the novel Black Magic?
Simply, it's a short story, a love short story, and very strange love story between a young man who works as a cameraman in Egyptian TV, and he saw the world from this lens of a cameraman. In it, I try to discover the world of media. I'm working in Egyptian TV too, in Culture Channel. So my experience in 10 years, I try to put it in this novel. Photography and camera can change the reality.
As far as your cooperation with the media, and particularly with Egyptian TV is concerned, is that still ongoing? And how is it developing now in the post-revolution situation, for example, your documentary work?
I think not a lot of things are changing in Egypt, especially in media, held by the government. So, for example, I tried to make a series of documentary short films about the revolution, and I can't achieve it in about 14 months, because the old regime is still as it is. But at the same time, we have a lot of young artists in the building. A lot of them try to work and try to express their support to the Egyptian revolution. And I think this struggle will take longer. But I think we have an avant-garde generation of announcers, writers in Egyptian media can totally change the policy of the governmental media. In the independent channels, it's better. But at the same time, we have a lot of channels held and controlled by the billionaires of former regime, try to protect themselves, try to destroy the main aims of our revolution.
What did you most want to talk about when you came to Prague?
Want to speak about literature, about art, about the new values in the world. I think what we call Arabic Spring carry a peace message to all the world, to remember the human being that they can't live without freedom, without dignity, without justice. So I think it is a human message to all the world. It's the role of the Egyptian, the Arabic new generation to tell the other that they don't want war, they don't want injustice, they don't want any more hate in this world.
What's your attitude towards the internet and towards blogs, for example, as a writer, because many writers have started using blogs?
Oh, I think blogs on Facebook and Twitter played a big role in increasing the interest of reading and writing about any subject in Egypt. The main thing was the political situation, and it gave evidence that talks to each other in this internet reality can change the reality itself. For the literature and the arts, I think it's add a lot of abilities to the Arabic literature. A lot of young writers start to write in Twitter, in Facebook, and I think it played an important role in the map of Arabic literature.
What are your impressions of Prague, and what else are you planning to do before you fly back?
It's really a very beautiful city. I enjoyed it a lot. Walked in its streets. Amazing. It is a city of art and a city of enjoyment. Thank you so much.
David Vaughan there talking to Egyptian novelist Hamdi El-Ghazar. This is Radio Prague. Now, after a long hiatus, we're back with our program magazine. Daniela Lazarova has a compendium of the weird and wonderful.
A security guard for a private company in Prague recently suffered a humiliating experience after managing to handcuff himself out of boredom. The guard was alone on duty and playing with the handcuffs when they suddenly clicked into place, and the guard realized that he did not have the key to free himself. After vainly trying to reach several colleagues, the man gave up and called the police, who had a good laugh when they arrived to free him. The incident was reported on by a police spokeswoman who did not say if the man was allowed to keep his job. A Ukrainian national living in the Czech Republic decided to change his identity for a quick visit to Paris. Knowing that as a Lithuanian citizen he would not need a visa to France, the man paid 1,500 euros for a false passport and set off. Much to his surprise, the fake document was detected almost immediately by a police patrol in Bavaria. The reason was simple. The document stated that its validity expired on July the 55th of 2016. The officers noted that no interpretation of the Gregorian calendar gave them reason to believe that such a day might come round. The Moravian metropolis of Brno boasts a unique invention, a pissoir for dogs. The pissoir resembles a street light favored by canines and is riddled with holes. The urine is soaked up by the device that minimizes the smell and protects other favorite targets, such as street corners and car tires, from being soiled. According to the daily Mlada Fronta Dnes, communities in Austria, Germany and Brazil have shown an interest in acquiring the contraption. A 16-year-old youth from the town of Zlín made headlines in connection with an incident he was determined to cover up. The youth was buying condoms for the first time and was so embarrassed to go to the cash register with them that he decided to nick a pack. Unfortunately, a security guard noticed and called in two police officers from the street to deal with the incident. The embarrassed adolescent was forced to buy the condoms flanked by two burly officers and made the papers the next day. He could hardly have ensured greater publicity had he paid for it. The beer brewery in Pilsen, which gave the world the famous Pilsner Urquell brew, is gearing up for a major birthday bash marking 170 years since Pilsner Urquell first saw the light of day. It has erected a huge clock dubbed the Beer Orloi outside its factory gates, showing not just the time and date, but how many days left to the anniversary and how many pints of the popular brew have been consumed since it came into the world in 1842, now something over 23 billion pints. The clock was officially inaugurated to the sound of Bedřich Smetana's symphonic poem Vltava played on a carillon. The big day is October 5th of 2012. The Pilsner Brewery also revived an old tradition this year. It sent the Pope a casket of Pilsner Urquell for Easter. The beer, blessed by the Bishop of Pilsen, was sent along with an original beer mug especially made for Pope Benedict. It was delivered to the Vatican by Czech Ambassador Pavel Vošalík and gratefully accepted, according to the CTK news agency. The Pilsner Brewery said it planned to make a tradition of this gift and noted that it had in the past supplied the brew to Pope Leo XIII and Pope Pius XI. Cardinal Dominic Duca has displayed a fine sense of humour by adopting four birds of a feather at Prague Zoo. The cardinal is now the adoptive father of four red-cowled cardinals, a bird species with a bright red head indigenous to Brazil, and they say a very fine singer. The cardinal's choice makes one wonder what animals Czech politicians would choose should they decide to participate in Prague Zoo's adoption programme. Four Prague coffee houses this week offered their clients Rotozarzas etiquette, the chance to partake in a performance where you are both actor and audience. Etiquette is a half-hour experience for two people in a public space. They wear headphones and are told what to do and say to each other as the situation develops. Many of the situations are borrowed from film and theatre and expose human communication at its rawest and most delicate. For a half hour, participants can shed their own skin and revel in becoming someone completely different, caught up in an engineered dialogue and relationship with their counterpart. The project has proved a huge success around Europe since its 2007 premiere, and the reaction in Prague has been wholly positive. The dialogues have now been translated into 14 languages, but in Prague they were only available in Czech, English, German or Spanish for 150 crowns per couple. Not so much, considering you both get a lead part and an unforgettable experience. Charles Bridge has fallen prey to the love padlocks craze, with sweethearts fixing padlocks to gates, bridges and monuments as a symbol of their everlasting love. The custom can be traced to Serbia in the first half of the 20th century. Legend has it that Nadja, a local schoolmistress, fell in love with a Serbian officer named Erelja. After they committed to each other, Arelja went to war in Greece, where he fell in love with a local woman. Nadia never recovered from the blow and pined away. As young girls from the village wanted to protect their own loves, they started writing down their names together with the names of their loved ones on padlocks and affixing them to the railings of the bridge where Nadia and Relja used to meet. The custom spread throughout Europe, though today different cities have different explanations for it. In Rome, the ritual of affixing love padlocks to the bridge Ponte Milvio can be attributed to the book I Want You by Italian author Federico Moccia. Either way, Prague's Charles Bridge has fallen prey to the craze, as have statues, gates and railings around the city. The spot where St. John of Nepomuk was supposedly thrown into the river is particularly popular. The water mill on Kampa Island is also studded with them, and while the authorities leave the padlocks in some places, in others they are regularly removed, such as from the statues on Charles Bridge. But then, statues are a frequent target of local artists, especially statues in the vicinity of parks and schools. Writer Eliška Krasnohorská, born in 1847, has been given a computer keyboard to hold, while the legionaries sport bright blue shoestrings. And finally, a gang of thieves last week managed to steal an entire railway bridge and 200 metres of rails between the towns of Loketh and Horní Slavkov, which they sold as scrap metal for the price of 120,000 crowns. What makes the story even wackier is that the police came to check up on them several times, and the thieves convinced them that they were from a company, a construction company, which was responsible for the bridge's maintenance.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarova. Now, as ever of a Saturday, it's another trip down memory lane, or rather through the halls of the Czech radio archives. Here's David Vaughan.
In the 1970s, the communist authorities tolerated popular music as long as it was insipid, colourless and unoriginal. Everything that the psychedelic Czech rock band The Plastic People of the Universe most definitely was not. Inspired by Frank Zappa and the Velvet Underground, they had long hair, their behaviour was unconventional and their lyrics anarchic. In 1976, four members of the band were sentenced to prison terms for what was described as organised disturbance of the peace. And in December of that same year, Czechoslovak Radio broadcast a documentary that painted the band in the darkest possible colours and included extracts secretly recorded at their concerts.
Takhle tedy vypadalo pravé umění v podání členů skupiny Plastic People. Řev, urážky a porno.
That's what true art, as interpreted by the Plastic People, sounds like. Noise, offensive language and pornography. They are nothing but common or garden hooligans and swindlers abusing the popularity of rock music among young people.
Kteří zneužili obliby rockové hudby mezi mládeží.
And the program went on to quote from one of their songs, taking the anarchic lyrics by the poet Egon Bondy completely at face value. What clearer proof did they need of the band's degeneracy?
Rozkopte obrazy, spalte si knihy,
Smash the pictures, burn the books, drive bulldozers through the theatres. Nothing of value should remain. Eliminate culture.
Všechno, co má nějakou cenu, spáchejte atentát na kulturu.
The regime's treatment of the plastic people was absurdly heavy-handed and in many ways counterproductive, as it acted as a catalyst for the Human Rights Manifesto, Charter 77. Forced onto the defensive, the authorities responded with their own anti-charter, which they bullied artists and musicians into signing. Czechoslovak Radio broadcast the launch of the anti-charter live from Prague's National Theatre on January the 28th, 1977. The event included a speech by the communist actress Jiřina Švorcová. To end this week's From the Archives, here's a short extract.
Skutečné umění, skutečná kultura má pomáhat kupředu jednotlivým národům i lidem.
True art, true culture should help individual countries and humanity to move forwards. It should help to build understanding between peoples in the spirit of peace and humanism. That is why we hold in contempt all those, and even in our country a little group of such recreants and traitors has emerged, who with insatiable pride, vain arrogance, selfishness, or for love of money, try to cut people off from their lives, and with inevitable logic become a tool of the anti-humanist forces of imperialism.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. If you'd like to listen again or recommend the program to others, we are always on the internet for you. Simply turn to our website at radio.cz. We are always happy to discuss your questions and comments. You can write to us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or, of course, with a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.